Welcome to Just a Minute. Sue Perkins here, and as the Minute Wars fades away, what an absolute treat to welcome you to Just a Minute. Let me introduce you to the four talented, marvellous people who are playing Just a Minute this week. They are Desiree Birch, Tony Hawkes, Jan Ravens and Paul Merton. Please whoop and cheer for all four of them. Magnificent whoopery. In time-honoured tradition, I'm going to be asking them to speak on a subject. I give them for 60 seconds without repetition, hesitation or deviation. Let's see how they fare. Desiree, we are going to start with you. And the subject is Dark Side of the Moon.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Can you speak for 60 seconds, please? Hesitation, repetition, deviation, not welcomed. Dark Side of the Moon, your time starts now.
Dark Side of the Moon is a Pink Floyd album that I have only heard because of a trifecta of circumstances: going to university, meeting my best friend who was raised by hippies, and the use of lysergic acid. If you begin playing this record as you watch The Wizard of Oz after the third Lion Roars from the MGM opening, it will sink.
Oh, that's painful. I hate it. Okay, Jan, that was your challenge.
It was repetition of M.
Yes, it was.
Oh, of course.
Acronyms are the devil's work on this program.
I'm so sorry.
It was a wonderful way to begin the show. Spoke beautifully for 25 seconds, buzzed correctly by Jan, so you inherit the topic of Dark Side of the Moon for 35 seconds, and your time starts now.
Dark Side of the Moon was one of the biggest selling albums of all time, and one of the tracks, The Great Gig in the Sky, featured a singer called Claire Torrey, who was asked to go in as a session person, and she made up that extraordinary high-pitched melody that goes above the bass bit, and she was only given a fee of about £300. So when she heard what a successful LP it had been, she said, "I am going to get myself
Speaking as the whistle went, you get the point. And Tony, you're with us next. We've got dinner at home. That's your subject. We've got dinner at home is on the card. Make of it what you will. 60 seconds you've got, and your time starts now.
As we go into this winter, which might be called one of discontent, we might all be saying this. We will be pulling on our overcoats as we sit at our dinner tables and saying whatever is on the card.
I did think, as you steered from tradition of saying what's on the card first, I thought, oh, this is going to be a tough one to claw back.
Oh, dear.
It's not the most memorable topic we've ever given out, so I did enjoy that. That was buzzed. Paul, you buzzed in there.
Yes, a senior moment, I think we call them.
Tony did forget what his subject was, sadly. He was carried away by his own rhetoric.
Yes, so I suspect a more classic version of deviation you could not get. So it's with you, Paul. You've got 43 seconds. We've got dinner at home starting now.
Sometimes when I'm having dinner at home, I listen to Pink Floyd's The Dark Side of the Moon. Nick Mason, the drummer, talking about the rumours that if you play Wizard of Oz to that particular record, the action matches. He says, no, that's ridiculous. You actually, if you play Sound of Music, it fits it much better. But I was having dinner at home once and I turned to my wife and I said, what is for dinner this evening, my darling? She said, I've prepared Coq au Vin. I said, well, that's nice, but I didn't think we had a lorry. But anyway.
Well, I was going to say hesitation, but I think it was part of the joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I withdraw my challenge.
No, that's all right. You're allowed to make a challenge. I'm going to stick with Paul and let him carry on. We've got dinner at home. And his time starts, he's got 18 seconds now.
There's a very funny British film, actually made in Hollywood, so it's American, called Dinner at Eight, featuring Jean Harlow and Maria Dressler. And it's about a group of guests gathered around in a country house who are talking to each other before they walk in to have the dinner at home. And it's a marvellous exchange between the two actresses.
Well done. Paul spoke as the whistle went, gains the point, and we are with you next, Jan. I love this. Your subject is cruise ships. Have you ever been on one? We shall find out. You've got 60 seconds to tell us all about it, starting now.
If you go on a cruise ship, you are subject to living on a 17-storey monstrosity. I don't know if you've ever been in one of those river estuaries or small harbours, or even in the lagoon at Venice, but when these cruise ships show up, it's like, why haven't they got planning permission? I mean, they are so vast, and there are whole communities aboard these cruise ships, and there are many of the most fantastic...
Paul.
I think we were teetering and maybe even beyond hesitation there.
There was an almost an overboard moment.
Yes. 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 Woman overboard.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Correct challenge, Paul. Hesitation there. So you get cruise ships. 28 seconds, please, starting now.
If you talk to the staff on cruise ships, they say watch out when the other members of the crew come round and start offering you free ice cream. It means they're freeing up the freezer, which has unfortunately been needed for somebody who's died during the voyage. So remember that when you are sailing up and down the Thames or heading towards Gibraltar, when you're holding that raspberry ripple in your hand, it means that somebody's not going to see Southampton again. Sorry to put it...
Oh, Desiree.
I didn't want to interrupt it, but I think you said means twice.
Yes,
means,
there was a repetition, but it's also true, isn't it?
It is true.
It is true. Not only did you listen out incredibly well, Desiree, but you have an uncanny ability to poach with just a second remaining. So you've got a second, ooh, luxuriate, to tell us about cruise ships starting now.
Cruise ships have dead people on them!
Paul, we're with you.
Yes.
Now, this is about a time when I suspect you were a mere lad in short trousers. Mods and rockers. Mods
ooh,
and
yes,
rockers
okay.
is for you. Can't wait for this one. 60 seconds, please, without hesitating, repeating or deviating. And your time starts now.
You referenced me wearing shorts. And I was probably about 5 years old when a boy in the council flats we lived at the time said to me rather aggressively, are you a mod or a rocker? And I had no idea what he was talking about. Of course, this was a teen phenomenon around about 1962, 63.
Oh. Tony.
Repetition of 60.
Yes.
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 Hyphenated.
Yes.
No, yeah, not hyphenated. You're reading out numbers, so you're not going to hyphenate.
Yeah, it's definitely repetition.
Okay, Paul has set the scene, and Tony, you get to carry on the vision. 44 seconds remain, my friend, and your time starts now.
Yes, these rival groups used to hang around in places like Brighton, often fighting. The rockers were into motorbikes, the mods, crochet and needlework. Battle with each other until one of them was bleeding and would fall to the ground, and the police would then come in, and then there'd be another day, and that's another story which I haven't got time to tell you now. I was once a mod, but this was, yes, I know you sound surprised by this, but I made several beautiful doilies. Took along to the meeting, and they were most impressed and said, Barry, they didn't know my name, and you are very, very... Oh, boy.
Repetition, yeah, repetition.
Repetition, yes, very, very. Well, yes.
Which was a shame.
It's a shame. Yeah. So, Mods and Rockers, Paul, you've got 2 seconds to complete the picture for us, if you wouldn't mind taking us to the whistle. Your time starts now.
I'm a combination of the two. I'm a mocker. And they...
Well, that's the end of our opening round. And with that, a few scores. Tony in fourth spot. Desiree and Jan sharing second place with Paul just a little out in front. Desiree, we're back with you. And the subject is family portraits. Have you ever done one? Does it hang over your mantelpiece? Let's find out. Family portraits, 60 seconds, please, starting now.
Are family portraits even a thing that happen anymore in the age of selfie sticks in front of the Eiffel Tower and face-tuning your photos on apps? I remember the days when families would get their corduroys on, pile into the station wagon, and go to Sears, where a man who probably lived in a van but called himself a professional photographer would wave things in your face and try to tell jokes and then definitely hit on your older sister, because that was also what he was...
Oh, Oh, I enjoyed that scene. I was there. You have a beautiful way with words. Tony, you destroyed those words.
Yes.
You well, dream smasher.
She was on the way to destroying them herself, I
That's
felt.
True.
She did hesitate, didn't she?
Yeah, there was
she
a hesitation there, to be fair. So, correct challenge. You get family portraits, please. 26 seconds. It's all yours, starting now.
I'm a big fan of broken family portraits, where you go around the prisons in the country and then just paint pictures of the people there. That's a bit of a bleak thing, and I wish I hadn't said it now. So I'll quickly move on to crochet as a much happier subject. Needlework.
Paul.
Well, having realised his error, Tony has now gone into crocheting, which I think is probably deviation from family portraits. Unless he's crocheting members of his family, of course. Yeah.
Now, I was trying to dig myself out of a horrible hole.
With crocheting?
Yeah, with crochet, and you can't dig with crochet.
No.
Even with the needles.
I'm going to give you that, Paul, because I think, to be fair, Tony did make it clear that he was changing tack to something that was not related to family portraits. So you're going to get the benefit of the doubt here, which means you get the subject. 8 seconds remaining. Hmm. Family portraits starting now.
I never knew my paternal grandmother, but there she is in the family portrait round about 1953, dressed in black, rather diminutive figure.
Tony, we're back with you, and hopefully for another masterclass in crocheting.
Yeah.
Yes.
How to be a morning person. That's your subject. How to be a morning person. Can't wait to hear what you've got to say about it. Your time starts now.
The best way to become a morning person is to grow old. It's very difficult to do, but I'm doing it at the moment in a way. And this is because you no longer really want to go out in the way that you did when you were young, wanting to paint the town red. No, instead you tuck yourself up into your little bed and get up incredibly early in the morning and go, my goodness, it's 6:30. I've got lots of things to do, and you do them and then it's 7:30.
Repetition of 30.
Yes. 6:30 and 7:30, I think. Correct challenge by Paul. 30 was indeed a repetition, which means you get the subject. How to be a morning person, Paul. 29 seconds remaining, starting now.
When I was 13 years old, I had a paper round, which meant getting up around about 6:30 every morning. And when you're young, you don't mind doing this so much, but dragging around these newspapers from door...
Repetition of around.
Yes, so correct challenge, repetition, and you get the subject, which is how to be a morning person. 17 seconds remaining, Desiree. Let's have it starting now.
The best way I've discovered for me to be a morning person is to stay up from the night before. In fact, if you take a nap around 10 p.m., you might just make it until 6 a.m. I couldn't remember things I'd said and not said, and that's the whole game.
It's tough. Tony, a challenge.
Yes, hesitation.
Yeah. Also, just a deviant lifestyle.
I have to say, I'm very much with you. It's the only way I'm ever on time for an early start, is you just smash the all-nighter, really.
Yeah.
Tony, correct challenge. And you've got 3 seconds to tell us all about how to be a morning person, starting now.
How to be a morning person, the musical, was magnificent.
Speaking as the whistle went, you get the point. And we are with you, Jan. And the subject is the cat's pyjamas. Yeah, the cat's pyjamas. Come on, you can do it. Your time starts now.
The cat's pyjamas is a phrase or saying that means the best it can possibly be. And I don't know why it's called the cat's pyjamas. There's another idiom, the bee's knees. Well, there is no rhyme nor reason to that either. Also, naturally, the dog's bollocks. Or rollocks, as we might say, the dog's rollocks. Now I've repeated dogs.
The challenge is, Tony.
Dogs.
A correct challenge, repetition of dogs. 31 seconds is all yours, Tony, should you want it, on the cat's pyjamas, starting now.
My cat was delighted when I became a rocker because I crocheted some pyjamas.
Paul.
Deviation. He was a mod when he did crochet. Now he says he's a rocker. It's almost you can't believe a word he says.
Correct challenge. Yeah. You're right, he's lost credibility in my eyes. Paul, well done. You get the point to correct challenge, and you get 26 fulsome seconds to tell us about the cat's pyjamas, starting now.
As the cat walked into the library, I could see it was proud of its new nightwear. The pyjamas shone beautifully in the moonlight as they streamed through the stained glass window. The cat stroked his whiskers and looked at me as if to say, "Tonight, I'm going out on the town." I gave him 20 quid, and he came back 5 hours later with three beautiful cats on his arm. And I said, "You've never done this before." He said, "I've never had the money before." Whatever.
The challenge is, Tony.
Well, it's a bit picky. Cats don't have arms.
May I also point out they don't wear pyjamas? No. The reason being, they can't put them on because they haven't got arms.
I think if we're to entertain a world where you're creating a crochet masterpiece in the middle of a mod and rockers punch-up in Brighton, we must allow Paul to have this reverie.
I just wanted to point it out in case people at home were getting confused.
Well, I love you. You were fine with the fact Paul had given the cat 20 quid to go out on the town. That's fine, Emmy.
But not to come back with three cats on an arm that didn't exist.
He bought the arm. At a second-hand shop. Yeah. So, my career on this programme, which has lasted 33 years, has led up to that single groan.
Paul, you keep the subject with 1 second remaining.
It's outrageous.
Yeah. So, your time starts now.
Meow!
And Paul gets a point with that meow from his armless cat. Paul, we return to you.
Yes.
And the subject here, the perfect mullet. Oh. 60 seconds, please, without hesitation, repetition or deviation. The perfect mullet, starting now.
I was fishing on the bank of the river. I'd baited my hook and I was looking at the water and I suddenly saw something swimming underneath. I then realised it was the perfect mullet, the one I'd been chasing for several years. It was legendary, this mullet, in that part of the Lake District. People said, "Oh, you don't want to catch that mullet." Why, they spoke like that. It was nothing like the Lake District. Like, say to me.
Tony.
Repetition of Lake District.
Yeah, thank goodness for that.
Indeed, there was a repetition of Lake District.
Absolutely.
So you get the point. You also get the subject, which is, lest we forget, the perfect mullet.
I bet he crocheted it. Sorry, I didn't mean to steal your material.
39 seconds on the perfect mullet, starting now.
When I was a mod, I crocheted this perfect mullet that I would put on the top of my head when I went along to the meetings. Unfortunately, some rockers came.
What do you mean the meetings? Did the mods have meetings?
I haven't really got a challenge.
I enjoyed it, though, nonetheless. I think it was a good thing to raise. I mean, the famous inflammatory disputes between the two now just reduced to meetings. But I'm going to get you to keep the subject in the vain hope that crochet won't make an appearance. If it does, it'll be repetition. So you've been warned. 30 seconds, starting now.
Goran Ivanisevic versus Andre Agassi. We might remember that final, if only for the magnificent mullet of the American. He stood on the baseline waiting to receive one of the biggest serves Wimbledon had ever seen, and the hair on his head stood even higher as he leapt forward to take the ball early. He was known for doing that. Sometimes he even half-volleyed on the baseline, but you don't want to...
Paul.
Unbelievably on the perfect mullet, repetition of baseline.
Yes. There was a repetition of baseline. You get the subject back, Paul. Just 5 seconds, please, on the perfect mullet, starting now.
If you look at pop stars in the 1980s, you will see that a perfect mullet undoubtedly adorned the head of...
Might I ask you to complete the sentence just for my own curiosity?
I had no idea who I was going to say.
Paul speaking as the whistle went, which means he gets the point. And right, let's have a look at the scores at the end of that round. We've got Jan in fourth place. Just in front, we've got Desiree, then Tony. And leading today, we have Paul as we go into round three. And Desiree. Deep sea diving.
Okay.
Lovely subject. Let's have 60 seconds, please, on deep sea diving. Your time starts now.
Deep sea diving is an activity that I have always longed to do. However, whenever I have seen those who have participated in deep sea diving, they tend to be men in their 60s with beer guts and not the athletes that I assumed they might have had to become. When you go deep sea diving, you might see those fish that light up and see things that you would normally eat in an Italian restaurant, but that apparently are sentient and you now have to stop imbibing so that you don't feel badly that you are consuming a... Yeah.
Tony.
I think she was going to die if I didn't buy.
Needed to come up for the air there? Yeah. Didn't take my tank.
Yeah, it was a hesitation.
There was a hesitation. I'm going to give you the point for the correct challenge, but I think it's time I gave Desiree the benefit of the doubt. Oh, I'd quite like to hear a little bit more. You've got 25 seconds.
Okay.
Let's have a little bit more on deep sea diving, please, starting now.
Deep sea diving is what you might find yourself doing if you get caught by the mafia being a snitch. They will attach concrete to your shoes, and you will go on a very short but exciting vacation to the bottom of the East River, most probably, where you will find the refuse of other drug use and people who told lies to the crime syndicate.
Took a beautiful, if sinister, turn there. Congratulations, speaking as the whistle went, you get a point. And Tony, we are back with you. Iced coffee. 60 seconds, hesitating, repetition or deviation not welcome on the subject of iced coffee, and your time starts now.
I'm not sure whose idea it was to come up with iced coffee, but I'm pretty convinced, in my mind anyway, that it wasn't a very good idea.
Jan.
Repetition of idea.
Yes, absolutely right it was.
By the way, never get an iced coffee on a cruise ship.
Correct challenge. Well done, Jan. You get the point there, and you get the subject, which is iced coffee. You've got 49 seconds remaining on that, starting now.
You can make iced coffee at home by simply putting an espresso in your blender and adding a little bit of milk and then whacking it all up with a few ice cubes. Put your implement on for a little while and you will soon find that you have a delicious, frothy beverage and you don't have to go into a shop where they sell these things and get one of these plastic cups.
Paul.
Was it hesitation?
A little bit.
But not enough.
But I'm going to give Jan the benefit of the doubt, I think. Yeah. It was a correct challenge. According to rules, you get the point.
Not least because of the great household hints that we're getting.
Yeah.
Apparently you don't even then need to go to the shops. Because no. You've done it. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant bit of advice
and
I've never
that's
heard.
Why. That's why I'm giving the point to Paul for a correct challenge, but I'd like to hear more because it's a public service interest
exactly.
That we... So, with 22 seconds remaining, Jan, iced coffee, please, starting now.
The coffee shop sells all kinds of... dip.
Paul.
Sorry, we had shop, didn't we?
We did. I'm wondering to myself if it's hyphenated. I think it isn't, so a correct challenge. 20 seconds, please, on iced coffee, starting now.
As I crawled my way towards the North Pole, I realised that my caffeine intake was rather low. I reached into my backpack and I saw that I had one cup of coffee left with the plastic lid on top. I grabbed a handful of snow and I chucked it into the combustible that was there and then I drank it back up and I said to myself, at last, I...
That's, of course, the origin story of Starbucks that was being evoked there. By
the one.
Speaking as the whistle went, gets that point, and we're on to the final round. Thank you for that. It is expected, but always welcome, nonetheless. Paul, we're with you for this final round. Your subject is recipe books.
Yes.
Recipe books it is. Can you speak for 60 seconds, please, on the subject of recipe books, starting now?
I refuse.
Tony, you buzzed in. What might be your challenge?
My challenge is I've got an enormous amount to say on recipe books.
Right. You've set yourself up there.
And,
well, you've got 58 seconds after that correct 50, challenge.
58 seconds, not a problem. Just a watch. Problem. Listen and learn.
58 seconds, Tony, starting now.
I'm not quite sure why all these people earn these money writing recipe books. They're not really doing it themselves. Aren't they just putting down things they've heard somewhere? Perhaps we could call this plagiarism. I'm not happy about it. As somebody who's written the book myself, it took me ages. And yet these books...
Paul.
Sorry, I panicked. I didn't know what he was going to say.
Neither did I.
It was a freestyle, I agree. Yeah.
I was agree. However, under the rules of just a minute, we're going to let Tony continue. He's
Absolutely.
Got 39 seconds remaining on recipe books.
He said he's got a lot to say about them.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see if that promise is fulfilled. Your time starts now.
Take a pinch of nutmeg. Put it in the nearest implement you can find.
What, like a television set? The nearest implement you can find. What sort of recipe is that? Deviation. It's not a proper recipe. Take a pinch of nutmeg and put it in the nearest implement you can find.
I mean...
There could be people at home trying to do this.
It's a correct challenge, but I'm minded, bearing in mind, I think he was referencing Jan's earlier riff on how to make an iced coffee, which was a real eye-opener for me.
Fair enough.
And as you say, Tony said himself he's got an awful lot to say.
Yeah, he hasn't yet done it, though.
Yeah, let's endure the next 32 seconds together, okay. Starting now.
You've put your keys on top of the bookcase.
God.
Repetition of put.
Indeed, it is a repetition of put.
Yes.
I'm interested to see what you'll do with 29 seconds, Paul, bearing in mind that you refused after one. But let's hope you found a lusty interest in recipe books in the intervening moments. Your time starts now.
Haven't had time to think about it. I no longer am refusing to talk about recipe books. I remember that my mother had a recipe book she was very fond of. It was written by Delia Smith, who I once met because I put her into a television sketch show. And what a lovely woman she was. She specialises in keeping her recipes very simple so that everybody at home can follow them, because sometimes professional chefs or cooks will come up with an extraordinary recipe which is very difficult to follow. I'll give you an example.
Paul speaking as the whistle went means he gets the point, and indeed that's the end of the show, so let's take a look at the scores. In fourth position, it doesn't matter. It's Jan. Enjoying second, it doesn't matter. It's Tony and Desiree. And in the lead, and it still doesn't matter, Mr. Paul Burton! And there, my lovelies, we have to leave you. But first, thanks to our delightful players of the game. It's been a pleasure to spend time with them. Desiree Birch, Tony Hawkes, Jan Ravens and Paul Merton. And we are indebted to Ian Messiter, who devised the show, and to Nicholas Parsons, who chaired Just a Minute over 50 wonderful years. And we miss him. Also, thank Caroline Barlow for blowing her whistle so beautifully. The producer was Rajiv Karia, and it was a BBC Studios production. And this is me, Sue Perkins, saying thank you ever so for listening, wherever you are. And please do join us again next time we play Just a Minute. Thank you.